This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Talking about how Philly has struggled. Kansas City can't hit water falling out of the boat right now either. And guess what? As we always say, you come up against another really tough customer in Shane Boz here for Tampa Bay. I do think Lorenzen can do enough to kind of limit the Rays, but you're right. I mean, this feels like unless Kansas City scores three, this would have to be Tampa Bay doing all the heavy lifting, no question about it.
I see 10 and I go, what am I missing there? So again, maybe that suspicious line, but I'm with you. My first blush there is to look to that under in Kansas City. Fountains up have been turned off offensively, that's for sure. It's the reason why we do this show. Welcome to this Friday edition of VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis. And Jensen, we were talking about it right as we were going off the air yesterday, as we kind of comb the desert each and every day in those baseball plays. And again, it just stuck out to us. 10 felt really heavy. 4-0, never a sweat. We mentioned Kansas City. How are they going to score? Jensen, sometimes they don't get a whole lot easier than that. But that was a pretty good read on our part to end the show yesterday.
Matt is a rocking chair winner, as you're going to find. Great to be with you again, buddy, to finish off what has been a very fun, very profitable week thus far. Let's finish it in style. But, I was joking with us on our text thread. Like, who's got an offense that's performing, you know, worse right now? Is it the Phillies? Is it the Royals? Is it the Guardians? I mean, you got a lot of these teams that can't hit water falling out of a boat. But, hey, as the great Vin Diesel once said, doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a mile. Winning is winning.
There it is.
That one about as easy as it gets, my friend.
And I wish it wasn't at the expense of that Kansas City offense, but we know how putrid it's been watching it each and every night here. Five-game losing skid for Fountains Up. They should be Fountains Closed right now with that offense. We'll get to Major League Baseball here. A lot to talk about on the program today, and what a show we've got. Zayd Hussain in from Chicago. It's International Fight Week. There is a buzz in this town for tomorrow night, UFC 317, Hall of Fame inductions last night. Some of those ceremonies and speeches were fantastic. Zayd's in town for that. Covers the MMA beat really, really well. And I know he's an Ilya Topuria guy. I want to see what he thinks about his guy this week, if he can get it done in the main event. Thomas Gable is going to join us here from the Borgata later on in hour number one. And I'm curious to see what the handle looks like this week for arguably the biggest fight card of the year, certainly Major League Baseball. And now that we've moved on from hockey and basketball, Lou Finocchiaro will join us from Arizona in hour number three. And Lou always has his best bets up there, not only for VSiN Pro subscribers, but again, does a great job with About Business podcast. And Colby Marcia, a lot of fun to have Colby on the program, recapping what he liked in Major League Baseball, certainly this week, and some of those prop bets that he has and what he sees in the docket for tonight and beyond. So let's get to it. It's the Friday edition of Highlights and Headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
Two in a row. You get shut out for one game. We'll just kind of wipe the slate clean tomorrow. Nope, not Kansas City. They get shut out for a second straight game. They've scored 4 runs in their last 5 games. As I mentioned, 5-game losing skid now to go 5 games under 500. Not good for yours truly, sitting on a over ticket for them pre-flop, if you will, before the year. Jensen, sometimes you get in these ruts. You've been in those clubhouses, and I know as a pitcher, you guys, it's your job to keep the offense in a rut. But this is really looking bad for Kansas City here. 5 games under, how do you get yourself out of a funk like the Royals find themselves in?
Usually you have to bring in Joe Boo for people that remember Major League. But no, in all seriousness, every team, Dave, at one point will go through these kind of offensive struggles. That you just witnessed it with the New York Mets, and what it felt like for a couple of weeks, could not get anything going or have a semblance of offensive continuity. And that is similar to what we're seeing in Kansas City. I mentioned Philadelphia. Dave, I mean, yesterday, a couple of days ago, we had 7 shutouts. Let me repeat that. A couple of days ago, 7 shutouts. So it is hard to do what we do here in Major League Baseball at scoring runs. But I think overall, when you look at where just this postseason picture stands up, and we will get to the official halfway point from a games played perspective here from many of the clubs after today. If you're the Royals, okay, it could be a lot worse, man. You've lost 5 in a row. You are 5 games under 500, but you're only 3.5 out of a playoff spot. Wow. This is the gift that's going to keep on giving, Dave, in the American League. As we had said at the beginning of the year, if you were going to look to a future spot in the junior circuit, you are going to have a fairly large menu, because there doesn't feel like there's going to be a boatload of separation. And even the way that Detroit has started this year, there is still not a lot of separation between probably the best team right now in the American League and maybe a couple of those wild card teams that are fighting for playoff position.
They've lost 13 of their last 18. They've scored in those 18 games three or more times, twice in those losses, in those 13 of 18 losses. That's amazing. Wow. They've only eclipsed three runs twice in that span. Oh, yeah, Dodgers come to town. Good news. There you go, Royals. Good luck. But I'm with you. Like, if they've got some offensive talent, we talk about Jack Cags a lot in the program here, they're going to have to get some of these young bats going here to fortify that lineup, because at some point their pitching is good, but you got to give them some support. That has not been the case. The Mets pitching had really been the hidden gem to begin the year, and now maybe it's getting exposed a little bit. And a bittersweet win yesterday. They split the series with the Braves. That's good news. And you get another shutout, as you're mentioning here, 4-0. But it wasn't Griffin Canning who was part of that shutout. He had to go out early. And Jensen, I was watching it live. We're not doctors. The Mets came out and said, it's an ankle, looked like an Achilles. We'll have to figure out. But when you see that reaction from a young kid like a Griffin Canning and his teammates coming over, again, we talk about it all the time in football, non-contact, right? He's trying to reset himself off the mound on a roller to short. And again, we don't know what the status is going to be, but you win the game, but you might have lost the battle here with Griffin Canning in that starting rotation. What do you make of that? And again, for the player, for the athlete, you hate to see it. And then for the team side of it, this is eroding that depth that the Mets once had.
Yep, and you went right where I was going, was, again, this was kind of the problem that we had identified beginning of the year, was what would the results of this rotation on paper look like out of the chute. Well, they acquitted themselves quite well, right? And one of the best, if not the overall best statistical starting rotation through the first 2 months of the year. Injuries we knew would be a part of it. That has been the case. Kodai Senga actually, I think, lasted a lot longer than I thought he might, into almost two and a half months of the season, but he's on the mend here, should be back from the strained hamstring, which is a good sign. We thought Sean Manaea was going to find his way back here relatively soon. He's got the loose bodies in the elbow. He's coming off the oblique injury. So never a good sign right there. You know, you have Tylor Megill, who has a sprained elbow as well. And so you're just looking up and down now your sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth potential options. When you get out of spring training, are, you know, half of them are now probably going to be done for quite some time. All that being said, this is why everything gets amplified now here in the next couple of weeks from a trade deadline perspective. A lot of conversations already in earnest. You are going to see some clubs now start to pivot and try and get some of the more expensive assets. And Dave, starting pitching, no matter what, will traditionally be the most expensive at the trade deadline. This is what the Mets are going to have to do. They're going to be in heavy competition with a lot of other clubs that are alive. And so all of a sudden, you're now having to address an area where you thought maybe we caught a little bit of luck with these guys starting out really well. And now you're going to have to go out and get at least depth options. Dave, not even just like, hey, these guys can really help us and impact us, but people that can just make the turn every fifth day in this rotation.
It's a tough one because, again, the good news is the Mets, with winning two in a row, and the Phillies on that losing skid, as you mentioned off the top, can't score runs either. Mets are back in first place. That's the really good news. But you just kind of wonder how long they can piecemeal this rotation and lean on that offense. It's kind of the counter Kansas City Royals that we're talking about off the top of the show here. So good news for the Mets, but the bad news is Griffin Canning looks like, again, we're not doctors, but it did not look good with all the injuries we've seen here, certainly in the NBA with the Achilles injuries here that we know are a year long pretty much to try to get back. Jensen, as a pitcher, even if it's an ankle and or that's what the Mets initially said, but those how long something like that could take to push off and get your mechanics back. It just looks like one of those injuries. We're not going to see Griffin Canning for a while.
No, I agree. And again, we'll wait for official diagnosis. We don't speculate here, but at the moment, you're lost for a fair chunk amount of time. Yep. And that's why I said, you look at the next 5 to 6 weeks where this all of a sudden becomes so imperative for the Mets, who have gotten off to this great start, who are now in that contending spot for a top two seed that will get you a bye. If anything, you want to do that just to protect the assets that you have in house, Dave. So a lot of dynamics going to be shifting here, especially in the National League East in the coming weeks.
What do you make of the Mets now? You could have got the Mets earlier this week at about plus $1.45. Now with the Phillies skid, they're minus $1.20. Phillies back to plus money. And there are the Braves, 22-1 now, still six games back. Every time they look like they kind of put a couple feet forward, they come right back to the starting gate, it feels like, for the Braves. Can't really get anything sustained for the ATL.
Yeah, I think for the Braves, again, I had told you that if you think you like them in the National League East, you might as well just go.
Yep.
Right now, I think they're 30-1 to win the National League. You might as well get that in pocket and then monetize all the way up, because they'll be in the wild card round at the very least. And if they win that, boy, you got a lot of different options depending on who they're going to match up with as well.
It is kind of crazy because they're closer to the Marlins and the Nats than they are the Phillies and the Mets. But we don't talk about that, right? We don't talk about really where they stand, because you can be the Marlins, all of a sudden they're hot. They win five of their last six out there in the Bay. They're at 34-45, and the Braves are just, two and a half games above Miami right now in the standings. All right, when we come back, the Rocket Mortgage, or the Rocket Classic, they call it now, is into the second round. They've already begun the second round in Detroit. I want to look back on a first-round leader bet yesterday that was an all-timer, and we'll try to figure out ways to handicap what we might see for the weekend. That is next right here. It's VSiN by the Books.
By the Books, right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books on this Friday edition. A big UFC card, obviously, UFC 317. Zayd Hussain is going to join us in studio next. Going to be a lot of fun catching up with Zayd in town from Chicago. Don't know how much sleep he got last night. We'll have to figure that out, Jensen. All these guys coming in for the fights this weekend. Pace yourselves. It's a long weekend. So we'll catch up with Zayd. Of course, we're going to have Lou Finocchiaro join us later on. To talk more about it, Thomas Gable and Colby Marcio to round out the program today. Yesterday, round one of the Rocket Classic, and we talked about it a little bit on the program, and it's kind of why we do what we do. You and I don't get the opportunity to really get into live betting a lot because of the time of our show here. And again, I'll put our network, just not because we're company men, up against any network that's out there. I'd say we're the best by far. For people like Matt Humans and Tim Murray and the, you know, Will Hills of the world that do it each and every night here in the network. But we talked about this time last week where we got on a Tommy Fleetwood bet, and I believe you got that at about 19-1, winner without market. And boy, you know, we try to figure out these different ways to make money for you out there. I did not take any of these wagers at the Rocket Classic before the tournament started. I wanted to try something different this week and just played four first round leader bets. And one of those was Aldrich Potgieter. And buddy,
yes.
Right? We were watching the big, he's a young kid, what, 20 years old. And he hadn't been on tour here for about 4 or 5 weeks, take a little time off, go back home to South Africa. But if we all remember, he should have won earlier this year. And somehow Brian Campbell hit a tree in the ball, right?
Yes.
So like somehow Potgieter didn't get home for those big tickets that day. And he was about 110-1 before the week began. And I got some text messages from people that saw what I played. Some of my friends, they're like, "Why? What got you on Potgieter?" And I said, "Well, he's the biggest hitter out there, arguably right now on tour, and he's a really good putter. Where he's not good is his iron play is a little bit iffy. It's not bad, but it's not great around the greens right now. But a course like this, where you can hit it all over the lot, Jensen, he's bombing it, 340, 345, and he reminds me of when Rory McIlroy came up, right? And you kind of look at, if you go back and remember Rory kind of pre-majors, and you go, man, this kid just hits it a country mile. When he figures it out a little bit here, you kind of rough up, you know, refine the edges a little bit, he's going to be a player to be reckoned with. Aldrich Potgieter goes out 7-under through 9 yesterday. And the leader of the clubhouse was Minwoo Lee at 9-under par. And I get home and I go, Jensen, oh my goodness, we're live with the kid. The kid's live. And he's got two par fives to play. And I'm going, oh my goodness, I can't wait for the broadcast to begin on Golf Channel. And right when they come on the broadcast, they say, we have a 59 watch for 20-year-old Aldrich Potgieter. And then he goes out, birdies 10. So now he's at 8 under par with 8 holes to play. And then he proceeds to go par, 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 par. And I go, you got to be kidding me. Like, it's stalling out right here. And I'm like, come on, kid. You can do this. You can do this. He makes it. He birdies the par 5, the last par 5 on the back 9. So he's now tied for the clubhouse lead at 9 under par. And I'm thinking, all right, we got 2 to play. Shoot a course record. The course record was 9 under par, Jensen, until yesterday. So he gets there. He birdies the 8th hole, which is his 17th hole of the day. He started off on the back 9. He's got the course record at 10 under par. And out of nowhere, Kevin Roy chips in for – while this is going on, I'm not even looking in the rear view. I'm just looking ahead. Kevin Roy comes out and chips in for an eagle and then birdies his last hole to get in at 10 under as well. Now I'm hoping for a push. Long story short, Potgieter gets to the final hole. He's got a 12-footer for the newest course record because 10 under par is already the new. And Jensen, it lips out by an edge. So I got to settle. And you can see the ticket here, 80-1. We settle for a push. They offer you the cash out. Never take the cash out, kids. Because, again, that gets you to $400 here on this instead of the 314. And by the way, Cameron Young, who I know Danny Higgins and I are associate producer, I took the 10-cent cash out. I took that 10-cent cash out, Danny. We got something back on that terrible bet of Cameron Young. But Jensen, this kid has got a ton of talent. And I think if we see these type numbers, whether or not they end up getting there or not, get them now, because kind of like Rory, these numbers aren't going to be there forever. And again, ties the course record with Kevin Roy yesterday at 10 under par.
Wow. Remarkable, dude. And what a sweat for you. Excited to kind of live vicariously as we're following that yesterday afternoon into the early evening. As you look at the board now, I was going to throw a couple of names out to you because, you know, we always like to do this on a Friday, adjust some placement markets. Again, this just a week ago in which you gave me the idea of the Tommy Fleetwood winner without, and we jumped on that too. I circled a couple of names. I'll throw them out to you. Thoughts now from what you've seen from yesterday. I started the top 10 markets, and I know it's a little bit of juice, but the way that Max Grazerman, played yesterday at $1.65, that kind of feels, like a semi-cheap price there for a top 10, including ties on DraftKings. I know Min Woo's at $1.40. That one might be a little bit easier. And then Potgieter, I almost thought about just taking, these are the top three guys right now on DraftKings. You can parlay all three of those to finish top 10. So with ties, you get paid out. That's 4-1. If you want to take Grazerman, Minwoo, and Potgieter right there, all three of those guys, you parlay them top 10, including ties. That's plus 404 right now. So didn't know if that was after what you saw, how the course was playing, those guys swinging it. Would you advocate for, a little fun money parlay?
I don't hate it, especially at 4-1, just because I'd be really surprised if Potgieter is not around after getting a taste, coming up so close to winning for the first time. And I know he's won, some lesser events, but to win a quote unquote bigger event on the PGA Tour, that would be massive for Aldrich. So I think he'll be there. I would. He's already on the course here. He's even par through two today. Kevin Roy, by the way, who was tied for the lead, has already made a bogey. So Potgieter right now is the outright leader at 10 under par. I don't mind that at all because I think all three of those guys should be around the top of the leaderboard come weekend time. And you've kind of built in that quote-unquote lagging day. Once you have, you fire those 9-unders, those 10-unders, it normally lends yourself to being around even if you have an indifferent day, which I would expect those guys to have at some point. Just don't know where it's going to come. I did look down a little bit longer on the board and played. The reason why I didn't play before the tournament, I didn't like the numbers of some of the guys that I liked. Like Cameron Young was about 25-1. Same thing for Matthew Fitzpatrick. And those guys got off to indifferent starts, 4-under, 5-under, not bad starts, only 5-6 off the lead. And then I played them this morning, Jensen. I played 55-1s on both Matty Fitzpatrick, and Cameron Young with the belief that some of those guys that we talked about, not that they're going to flatten out. I don't expect them to come back, but I think it's such a gettable golf course And it's such a long hitter's golf course. And Matty Fitzpatrick is sneaky long. We know how long Cam Young is. That there's not a lot of difficulty and danger in hitting that driver. So I'm looking for those guys this week. And I also took a long shot play this morning on Akshay Bhatia at 100-1.
Okay.
And again, Bhatia starting off the day 7 back of the lead. Another guy who can just absolutely hit it a country mile. And if he can get that flat stick going a little bit, I should be able to make some runs. So I'm not going to shy away from the guys that shot 3, 4, or 5 under par yesterday. Cut Ryan right now is going to be 4 under par is what I'm seeing early here on a Friday. Because I do think for those guys that are class players out there that have won on big time events, they still look at the top of the leaderboard and go, there's nobody there that scares me, right? There's nobody there that goes, they're going to run away with this thing. So I think it's gettable for some of those bigger names to come back of the pack.
Let me throw 3 more names at you from the outright market. I just circled these as you were talking through your rationale here. Harry Hall at 22-1. Davis Thompson, who we talked about yesterday, and then I think also we talked about with Wes Ren. I think Wes has Davis Thompson too on his card. He's at 25-1, so still very nice, handsome payout there. And then, you know, our old friend, the battering clubhouse man, Wyndham Clark. I mean, 28-1, I even took a look. I mean, he's plus $1.90 for a top 10. Any interest? I know that's more dark horse kind of look there, but any interest in those guys?
You know, I looked at Wyndham pre-tournament as I was doing the handicaps, knowing I wasn't going to bet them pre-tournament. I was kind of hoping he got off to a slower start, the number would go up. Because Wyndham is one, I mean, guy won a U.S. Open, right? So we know at some of the bigger events, he normally shines there. I do worry about where he is mentally, but the golf course should not be too difficult for him. So I'm not going to get mad at you. If you want to play a longer number on Wyndham Clark, a guy that can hit it a country mile as well. It's a profiling course for Wyndham Clark. So I like where your head's at. Davis Thompson, I do think, is a smart play there. If you can get him in 25-1, I'm seeing right now that's not a bad ticket to have. And Grazerman, as you mentioned earlier, that's a guy that I know Kelly Bidwin is on his radar here on long shots this week. So I think we're in good company with some of the thought process going down the road. If you want to get in, like we talked about this time last week with the Fleetwood, and what a sweat that turned out to be, should have won that tournament. I think these are some names at affordable prices a little bit longer down the board that you can get in on here before round 2 really gets underway. You want to get in on the ponies, got you covered there as well. $200 sign-up bonus right now with our friends over at First Bet. So that, again, is firstbet.com, the number one, stbet.com. Use the promo code VSIN200, score a 20% rebate on all of your wagers for the first 60 days, up to $200. Do not miss out and start betting today at firstbet.com. We're talking all things UFC 317 next, right here on VSIN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSIN by the Books, right here on VSIN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books, here in this Friday morning. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here with you. And Jensen, as I mentioned, just driving around town this week, and you see all the ads popping up and on all the casinos and hotels promoting UFC 317. All the bigwigs coming in town this week for this fight. And it's always great to have Zayd Hussain join us in studio here at Circa. Zayd, great to have you in the program. Everybody give him a follow on X at Zayd_Hussain. And does a great job here covering MMA. Zayd, and I knew you were going to be in town for this one because you and I have talked about Ilya Topuria for years. So I know a lot of people now are looking at Ilya at 145-pound champion, going up in weight at 55 to become a double champ, if you will. I know he's given up the belt at 45. But you've been on him early on, kind of now the Johnny-come-latelys are with you. What did you see in Ilya that you were telling me a couple years ago, Dave, this guy's the real deal? He's going to be champion, and now might be a champion in 2 different weight classes.
Yeah, I think when you look at Topuria, what I saw real early was the boxing. I mean, his boxing is so crisp. When you look at what he does inside the octagon, he's, you know, every single person he fights, he's feinting, and he's looking to cut off. He cut off every single person, and he has the power to put their lights out. He's defensively sound. He has major, major power in his hands. And I think what we've seen with Max Holloway being the first guy to knock him out, then he obviously beforehand fights Volkanovski for the title, knocks him out. destroys Josh Emmett in brutal fashion. And Josh Emmett is still one of the toughest chins I've ever seen to be able to take five rounds of that. But Topuria is just so fundamentally sound. And when he talks about being the new generation of MMA, he's not lying. I think he's going to be the future for a long time.
Yeah, Zeta, and agree totally with that handicap. And it was something Dave brought to our attention very early this week once we finally found out what the round totals were for some of these main card fights. And Dave, I will never forget your reaction, like 1.5. That gives you a complete black and white handicap of where the market believes this fight is. So Zeta, I'll give you the floor on it. Dave and I have said, and I think we agree, that the speed and the power element, if you think that Topuria ends this thing quickly, you know, by knockout or the under 1.5 is the way to go. The longer it goes, you know, Charles has an opportunity to get him down to the ground, the submission ability. Is that the way you see how this fight could play out?
I think it's inevitable for this car to be an absolute car crash, or for this fight to be a car crash. Charles Oliveira only knows one way, and that's to just go forward and go forward in that high stance. I think he's going to come out aggressive. He's going to come out throwing teep kicks in that high guard, and Topuria's not going to have to cut him off like how he did other fighters. You know, this is a guy that's going to be right in your face with him. And I think Topuria finishes him early with the body shot. I think he really hurts him to the body in the spot.
And he says, I'm going to get him out of there in the first round. That's what Topuria is saying here publicly, obviously. And he does believe that. And you're right. He said, I know what Charles is going to do. I don't have to worry about that. He's going to come right to me, tailor-made for me. Now, the numbers here at Circa have changed dramatically because you could have gotten Charles Oliveira 48 hours ago at 4-1. You can't anymore. So some money has come down. Now Topuria is minus 420. He was north of $5 betting favorite. And I wonder if that's the public money coming in now on Oliveira, because we do know how popular a fighter he is. We don't like to lay $4, 420 on most fighters here. Do you think that's still a fair price on Topuria, or is there a better way for you if you want to back Ilya to back him instead of the big price point?
So earlier in the week, you could have got Ilya at around minus 140 by knockout. It's up to about minus 165 to minus 170. I think that's the way to play him if you're going to play him. Finish is worth a look if you get a price too, because you never know what the club and sub situation. I know we talked about that earlier. I think Topuria ultimately is going to get this done inside the distance. So if you could get a good number on finish or a good number on KO, I think you take it instead of laying the full price.
Yeah, it is wild. Zeta at DraftKings right now, Topuria by knockout, -$1.75. It's just crazy to look at some of these prices for it. Also, I know in the flyweight with Pantoja and Kai Kara France, another unique handicap here. How do you size it up? You feel like Pantoja has got the ability, whether it's got a go-to decision or not. Do you see that being the way to lean here for that fight as well?
Yeah, I feel like every year I come during International Fight Week and I talk about how good Pantoja is.
That's right.
I mean, and every single year, I think he should be priced at least a $3 favorite against, you know, some of these contenders. When you look at what Pantoja's done, I mean, this is a guy that's literally beaten every single person in the division. I mean, he's going to start lapping all these guys pretty soon. And I think with Pantoja, he should be closer to, a $3 betting favorite. I really think it's hard for Kara France to get this done, you know. He's known as a power puncher almost, but when you step in the cage with Pantoja and you can't really throw those overhand punches that you're throwing with all that power, because Pantoja's going to change levels and take you down right away. And I think this is just a real tough matchup for Kai Kara France. I see Pantoja rolling here. I could see a rear naked choke finish, or I could just see a decision victory. Overall, I think this is a great parlay piece in spots. If you want to, you know, take a Pantoja and take a Topuria, pay close to even money. So it's worth a look.
We mentioned that these guys do know each other. They fought in the Ultimate Fighter. I know it was a long time ago for these guys. We didn't know who these guys were going to be at that time. But I went back and watched that fight again, and I'm sure I watched it when it happened in real time. And it did not go to a third round, went to a second round. But at the end of that second round, Kai was able to stuff some of those takedowns. And I feel like that's the only way he can do this, right? He's got to stuff takedowns on Pantoja, keep the fight standing, and utilize the power that he does have in the hands. If not, it could be a backpack situation. He's constantly defending. And we know when you're constantly defending, you can't get your offense off.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny. I went to dinner last night with Vinicius Oliveira, a PFL guy, just come off a great victory. And he talked about training with Pantoja and how the most underrated thing he has is his cardio. Even though he looks exhausted out there, he's going to be able to, I think, push a pace on Kara France, which Kara France in a five-round fight, we don't know how he's going to last. So I think, even if he does stuff those takedowns early, maybe later on, you know, when those hands are tired and you're throwing all those shots, you're not going to be able to stuff that double leg, that single leg against the fence. So I think overall Pantoja rolls here.
How about that, Jensen? Just having, you know, dinner with fighters, no big deal. Comes into town. That's
I love
what he
it.
Does.
Is it? One of us, Sade, absolutely. And next time you get the invite, we're happy to pay for a little bit, absolutely. Hey, you know, speaking of cardio, it was kind of the thing that I underlined with Moicano. Obviously, you know, very high pace with the kickboxing, you know, the aggression, obviously one of his big assets as well. This fight in particular, you know, kind of the appetizer here before we get to the championship bouts here. What do you like most, and maybe, you know, a handicap here that people aren't really seeing on the surface?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting fight with Dariush and Moicano. Dariush earlier in the week was plus 150, plus 160. You saw a ton of sharp money just fall in on Dariush. I agree with it. I think Moicano is not going to be able to take him down, and I think Dariush has an advantage on the feet when you look at this spot. I think he's a cleaner striker. He lost to only the best, which is Armand and Charles. I think Moicano is going to be behind schedule on the feet. I really do. And I think if you got the plus 150, you know, you made a great bet. And I still think if you could get Dariush at plus money, you take it.
I have not wagered on that fight because I've gone so back and forth on Money Moicano and Dariush here. And Vinil is a guy that he's a nice guy, right? He's not going to get into the verbal stuff that we see with Money Moicano, who has been saying, I mean, he's coming off a 2-fight losing streak here. He really needs this to stay relevant at the top of this division. I wonder if he's going up against the wrong guy coming off that Oliveira loss where Benny didn't look great. It's been a minute since we've seen him in the octagon. He might be fresh in this one. The Royval fight, I've been talking about it all week against Joshua Van. And I feel like we get what's new. Joshua Van is what's new. And we just saw him fight a couple weeks ago. And now a short turnaround against a guy in the Raw Dog in Royval who we know is a madman out there. Pull guard. We don't know what he's going to do, right? Is that wild man style going to play into Joshua Van's hands, or is this levels to this game and maybe Van's biting off a little bit too much than he can chew?
I think this is levels. I really do. I think this is a spot where Royval's faced the best, and he's only lost to really the best. I mean, this is a guy that won against Moreno, a very close split decision, and you know he's back and forth competitive with some of the best guys in the world. And Joshua Van's a guy that a couple fights back just lost to Charles Jourdain.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, I like the relevancy of, okay, he won the last couple fights, so his stock is so high, but I'm not buying him, you know, against a Brandon Royval. I do not think he should be a favorite here. I really like Royval on the spot. I think he could pressure, he could mix it up. And overall, I think this is going to be a tough night at the office for Van.
There it is, Jensen. When that happens, that's the fire spot, right? Because the yep, handicaps align. I love it.
All right, last 30 seconds with you, Zayd. Last time you were in studio, you had arguably the most convincing sell of a wager to make for the year. You're back at it, buddy. You got the floor. What do you like on this main card?
Okay, so I think you do a two-leg parlay here on the spot. One with the main card and one with the earlier fight. Ooh. We're gonna fit, you know, roll over to early prelims. My guy Denise fighting Alvin Hines. Okay, Alvin Hines is a guy that took this fight on real short notice after we had a dropout. I think Denise at minus 325 is too slim. I think it could be close to a $5 betting favorite. I truly believe it. Hines is a guy that's faced really, really low-level competition, and I don't think is a guy that can stand on the feet with Denise, and I don't think he's going to be able to have the success of the takedowns. So I think you parlay Denise, you parlay Pantoja, and you get close to even money, you know, on a nice two-man parlay.
Put it in the bank, people. Denise and Pantoja as your two-leg parlay. Zay, great to have you in studio, my friend. Always great to see you. And I'll be looking for big things from you, not just in the fight game, maybe in the cinema, too. We'll get to that somewhere down the road. There he is, everybody. Give him a follow at Zayd_Hussein. When we come back, we're going to go back out to Atlantic City, catch up with our guy, Thomas Gable. That is next here on VSiN by the Books.
VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. A great conversation with Zayd Hussein, kind enough to join us here in studio in the last segment. And Jensen, love catching up with our guy Thomas Gable out there at the Racing Sportsbook as a director at the Borgata. He joins us now here in the Progressive Guest Line. Give him a follow at T Gable Sports on X. And Thomas, we've been talking about it with Zayd. We're going to talk about it with Lou Finocchiaro later on in the program here, UFC 317. Are you seeing it in Jersey? I know, like in Vegas, we can feel it here. It's on all the billboards and International Fight Week. How are those tentacles back in Atlantic City for the betting perspective of UFC 317?
It's very big, especially this time of the year when you're not competing with a sport called football or, you know, basketball. You know, right now, the daily, you know, day-to-day betting is simply Major League Baseball, maybe some WNBA thrown in there. But so when the UFC comes around on the weekends, and especially when you have a card like this on pay-per-view like this, it not only does it fill up the place, you know, from a perspective of drawing people in physically into the books and not just betting on the apps, but obviously the handle goes up tremendously as well. So you have a great card here for UFC 317, two good co-main events, and I think the handle is going to be just tremendous tomorrow night.
TG, do you guys see when there are limited sports period to bet on? Do you guys get a lot of crossover parlays too? I know Dave and I talked earlier this week about just looking at Topuria, and a lot of people will use just that money line in a parlay format. Any creativity you see from bettors, or is it pretty much everyone stays within the lines of those sports just period?
Sure, you'll always get some cross-sport parlays, not nearly as many as you would just from guys staying kind of within the sport, but you would certainly see this come tomorrow, be throwing in a fighter or two and maybe a Major League Baseball game. Again, with the fact that he is so expensive right now, he's going to be in a ton of parlays. You're not going to see a ton of straight bets come in when he's, you know, minus 460, minus 450, somewhere in that range. People aren't going to lay that price. So you're going to see him thrown in a lot of parlays, and some of those are going to be with cross sports.
Thomas, I, you know, guilty as charged. And we talked about it the week leading up to the fight, and it was Jake Paul against Mike Tyson. And I said, I'm not betting this fight. I'm just not going to bet the fight. And then literally about 5 minutes before the fight, I said, all right, I'm going to put $50 on Tyson by knockout. And it's still the worst bet that I've made because I got emotional about it here. Now I see, you know, Jake Paul's going to be fighting against Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. tomorrow night. Are you booking that? Are people running to the window to bet that?
We are booking it. It's not going to be nearly the it's not even going to be a tenth of the interest of Jake Paul, Mike Tyson. Just isn't. I mean, Jake Paul, again, $7 favorite in that fight against Cesar Chavez Jr. So it's just, I don't think we're going to write much business on it. It just doesn't have the juice that obviously somebody like Tyson brought to that fight. I mean, when Jake Paul's been doing these boxing matches, it's mostly been against guys that either one have never really boxed before, either they came from the MMA world or wherever. The Tyson fight was obviously an anomaly just because it was Tyson, and you know, obviously everybody has their memory of him, and so that was a different story. I until we actually see him maybe fight like a I don't know who it would be right. Who you could throw in there, but you're not going to get that kind of interest again.
TG, the interest is going to build here in earnest in the coming weeks. Of course, football season on the horizon here. We get our betting guide at VSiN coming out on July 1st. And a team that I'm pretty high on this year, we will start with in our handicap of the NFC West, the San Francisco 49ers. Some interesting alternate win totals available for people. I'll give you the floor. Let's start with the Niners. They finished last this year. Do they have a chance to go from worst to first in your eyes?
I think they definitely do. As you said, we know they had a rough season last year. Deebo Samuel gone. Now Brock Purdy can afford a new car with his new contract. But, we've seen Purdy thrive in this Kyle Shanahan system, and I know he gets knocks, but he still has to execute what's being asked by Shanahan. And he has shown that he is capable of doing that. It was just 2 years ago when he led the league in yards per attempt and passer rating. And I think the one thing the Niners also have going for them, it's a very, very doable schedule. It's, I think, one of the easier schedules, obviously, with their record last year. And that's honestly why their win total is at 10.5. When you look at the win totals here for the division as a whole, you have the Niners at 10.5, and you have the Rams there sitting at 9.5. Now, if you look at their odds to make the playoffs, they're pretty much identical in terms of the chance to make the playoff. But you have one more win tacked on to the Niners. And you know, when you look at the board and you see, for instance, the Detroit Lions also at 10.5 season wins, from a pure power rating, the Lions are definitely the better team, but the Niners have a relatively easy schedule, and that's why that win total isn't 9.5 for the 49ers. But I think overall for this division, it's one of the more interesting divisions in football. Obviously, the Rams are going to be expected to be there with the Niners battling it out for the division. And I think even Arizona and Seattle are intriguing stories this year. You know, Seattle's sitting there at 5-1 to win the division. Obviously, lots of changes there. No more Geno Smith, Tyler Lockett, or DK Metcalf. In comes Sam Darnold, which was a little surprising to me when it happened. We know Darnold thrived in Minnesota last year. Now we'll see how he does in Clint Kubiak's offense. Whether we get some consistency year over year from Darnold in a new system with new teammates, we will see. I'd expect to see a healthy dose of the running game used in Seattle this year, and that's even with the addition there of Cooper Kupp. And Arizona, who, like Seattle, they have a season win total set at 8.5, slightly better odds at +450 to win the division, though. But this is a team that I really like coming into training camp. You have a healthy Kyler Murray coming off his best rushing season since 2020 when he was selected for the Pro Bowl. So also year two of Marvin Harrison Jr., James Conner running back, who will be looking for his third straight 1,000-yard rushing season, and Trey McBride at tight end, who had a breakout year. There's a lot to like with this Arizona team on offense, and their win total set there at 8.5. I will personally be playing that to the over. In terms of the futures with this division, Arizona, we do have some liability on Arizona right now to win this. They've been a popular play in the futures market for that AFC West division crown. And then that leaves us, obviously, with the Rams there, +185. The Rams legitimately had the best shot of any team in beating the Eagles in the playoffs last year. You know, that game came right down to the wire. And Matthew Stafford, even at age 37, he's still the best quarterback in this division. No more Cooper Kupp, but they added Devontae Adams to go with Puka Nacua and Kyren Williams. The offensive line is the best in the division when healthy. And if they can protect Stafford and keep him healthy, this Rams team will be right there at the end of the season, not only with a shot at the division title, but I think also a shot to go potentially a little bit even further in the playoffs. I know they kind of surprised some people last year. The book's out now, and I think everybody realizes just how good this Rams team can be. Stafford sitting there 35-1 in the MVP market. Purdy's 28-1. Both those guys with better odds than Dak right now, Dave.
Oh, that's disgraceful, Thomas.
I know. No respect for Dak.
I will say this. I'm surprised that your liability is with Arizona in the division. I didn't see that coming. That is a bit of a surprise to me. But I understand it. And I do feel like it's going to be a very competitive division for all four of those teams there. So four really good teams. I'll be curious to see how that shakes out 1-4 as the season goes. And Thomas, as we have to let you go here, would you be more intrigued in that Jake Paul, Julio Cesar Chavez fight Jr. if it was senior instead of junior fighting Jake Paul?
That potentially I could be. That may make me want to watch more than this.
I think I take the dad in his heart at his age over the kid in his lack of heart. I mean, this should be, I cannot believe that a Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. is that big of an underdog, a real fighter against a fake fighter. But here we are, Thomas. Appreciate the insight as always. Give him a follow on X at T Gable Sports. And if you're out there in Atlantic City, go say hi to Thomas at the Borgata. We're coming up hour number two straight ahead here on VSiN by the Books.